You're listening to Writing Snippets, the podcast about writing. Your hosts for today are...
Lillian.
Lauren.
Alice.
Heather Moore.
Ava.
All right, we're here again with Heather Moore, author of some LDS historical fiction novels, Alma Younger and Out of Jerusalem. And we're going to be talking... She's also an editor with Precision Editing Group. She is the manager, actually.
Yeah, I own the company, and I just call myself the managing editor because I think president... Sounds pretentious.
Did you start the company?
Yeah, I did. Actually, the reason I started it is once you get published and you go to writers' conferences, you'll have people come up and say, oh, you're published. Can you just read my book or a few chapters and tell me what you think? Because they're really excited to be able to talk to someone that has a publisher. And so if you say yes, that's great. But then you spend 3 or 4 days editing their book. Mm-hmm. And then you realize I didn't get any of my own writing done. And I can't just do this for everyone that asked me. And also, if someone brought me a book that I felt like, well, I don't really read that genre, or I don't feel comfortable editing that, then I felt like even if I had an editing company, I couldn't do it on my own. But I know a lot of authors out there and a lot of really good editors out there that might be interested in freelancing. And so that's why I called it Precision Editing Group. I can't remember where it was, just like one of those days where you're on GoDaddy.com and you're trying to find a domain name. Okay, that one didn't work. That one did. Okay, so you keep going through until you find the one that works. And I think I was trying to do precision editing, but it wasn't. It was already owned, and so I did Precision Editing Group, which made more sense because really, it's, I have people that I go to for every genre that comes in. It's not just me. Even though, you know, I make all the assignments, I feel like I couldn't do it without other editors in there.
Yeah. And all the editors are published.
Yeah, well, not all of my content editors are published. I have some copy editors that aren't, maybe in some articles and kind of things. But with content editing, I think it really takes a special skill. And I know that having that added experience with a published author, I think that really does give more value to the edit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if someone were interested in working for you, what would their qualifications need to be?
First of all, it would kind of depend on the time of year, because we have different times of year that are more busy. And so if it's a time of year that I feel like, okay, I can send them like an experiment edit to do, and if they come back really good and I'm getting busier and busier, then I'll probably use them. Right now I have about 5 or 6 editors that are kind of my core editors, they're kind of my go-to editors. But if I start getting really busy, then I'll go out to another 3 or 4 that I kind of have in the wings. So I would just say, just send a resume and the kind of book you like to edit. And then if I find something I feel like, okay, I want to try this out on her and see. And then I'll go through the edit that they did. And another thing that's kind of a good test is if the client comes back and says, oh, I love this edit and I want more. Even if the edit is completely straightforward and a little bit harsh, they know that it's going to make them a better writer.
Yeah.
And so that can kind of be a test too, is if the client comes back and wants, you know, more editing after that.
Well, I'm curious, what makes it busier? Like, what times of year are busier?
I just think when people, we actually get really busy, like in January and February. I think people write during Christmas break. And after
New Year's resolution.
Yeah. Yeah, we're actually really slow, like super slow in the summer. But then, like about now, we're starting to pick up, you know, by October, because people start getting back into...
They get out of the yard and back to the word processor.
Yeah, back to the computer.
Kids are back in school.
Yeah. And then after a writer's conference, we get a whole bunch of 10-page submissions. Mm-hmm. Or if a contest is coming up, people can sometimes will use us that for the free... I said, so you know, you get one freebie, so you can use it for this contest, but...
How does this not engulf your entire life? How do you keep writing and...
The real way it doesn't engulf my life is I actually don't edit hardly at all anymore.
Delegation.
And so I now delegate, I'd say 95%. And sometimes I think, oh, I'll just take this one. And then I take it and I'm always like, oh, you know, it's such a chore because I know that I have to, you know, block out 3 or 4 hours for, and I'm actually kind of a slow editor, so I'm probably a lot more slower than my other editors are. And for 50 pages, I mean, I could spend like an hour on 15 pages, so that's like a good 3 to 4 hours for me.
Wow. What is the turnaround? How fast would someone get their novel back?
A full-length novel, say 300 pages, I'd say about 3 weeks. I mean, usually we could do 2 weeks, But I try to say, give a little more leeway because, I mean, like an editor can get suddenly busy for something. And these are all just part-time side jobs. So I don't have anyone sitting in an office doing editing 8 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. They work from home.
Yeah. Everyone just works from home and all over the place. And so it's really easy. Everything that we do is through email, and that really helps. And they have a few clients that really want to send us a hard copy. They're usually older clients that they don't trust email or we don't really fax, but they don't trust any electronic systems. But so, that's hard because then you have to go to the post office and mail things. Yeah. And
but you are willing to work with a hard copy.
Yeah, we've done that before.
Okay. Well, what are some things writers should look for when they revise their own writing?
Oh, that's a really good question. I'm sure there's a really good list somewhere, and you can probably Google all kinds of things.
Yeah.
But after you do, well, the first thing to say is when you write your first draft, just write it. Don't worry about all these other things that are going on, whether you have too many adverbs or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just write your first draft and give yourself permission to say, okay, half of it might be lousy, but I'm not going to care. I'm just going to get the story down. And then once you have the story down and you know your characters, by the end of your book, you know your characters pretty well. And so you can start going through and you can start seeing, oh, this is not consistent because by the end of the story, I really knew my character and I know she wouldn't do it this mm-hmm. in chapter 3. So the second draft is when you're going to start getting more picky. And one of the first things you want to make sure is you have a hook at the beginning, your very first chapter, very first page, very first paragraph, that it's really strong, because a lot of times an editor agent, that's all they're going to read is the first page if they get past their query letter. That's a whole nother conversation. So once you have your hook there, then you want to make sure that at the end of every chapter you also have some sort of a hook. It doesn't have to be like a cliffhanger, like, and then he pull out a gun. It can just be something compelling, or it could be just new information, or it could just be an idea that the character has. You're like, oh, now it's going to happen, or that mm-hmm. might change the story. And that way, because if you think of a reader or even an agent, and not being able to put your book down, if you have the end of every chapter or the end of a scene, have it compelling enough that they want to keep reading. So that's something that can be very analytical. You can just literally go to every chapter, go to the end, and then read the last paragraph and say, is this a good enough hook or not? Or do I need it? Cut my scene shorter or add in a couple more paragraphs. And that might be a solution. Another thing too is, you know, research word count and research the genre. Always be reading. If you're writing young adult books, be reading young adult books. And if you're writing picture books, you know, be reading picture books. And that way you kind of just know that voice and the style and also what's selling, and so you can make your manuscript competitive. And then you can get down to like the nitty gritty, making sure you don't have adverbs in your dialogue tags, or if you do, that you only have a couple, and take out almost all your exclamation points and look for anything that's repetitive or those words that really stand out, like plethora. I mean, that kind of word, if you use it over and over, it's really going to be obnoxious. Or if your characters nod like 8 times every page. Yeah, they're always smiling. Why are they smiling so much? So, and those kind of things, I mean, you don't worry about in your first draft at all, but the second draft, and obviously you'll probably go through it more than that. Mm-hmm. But those are just some things to start. Any words that are overused, like was and were, any passive words, or he saw, he felt, he knew, those kind of things. Sometimes you can just take the sentence and to show the action and not he saw them go to the store. They went to the store. Mm-hmm. You don't need to always have in that.
Because if it's from their viewpoint, right. you know they're seeing it and hearing it.
We're already in their point of view. And another thing, too, is check with point of view and make sure if you're switching points of view that you're staying true to that point of view and you're not, I don't know what Alice is thinking. She's looking at me from across the couch. And so, I mean, there's a lot. But and there's a lot you can find online, too, to go through. One thing that I do a lot is I notice in the book I'm writing right now, they hold hands a lot. So I know that's going to be something I'm going to be changing as I go through the next draft. I'm like, I think they're holding hands in every scene. That's really annoying. So that will all change.
I love the idea of looking for a hook at the very beginning, first paragraph, and then at the end of every chapter. That's a really good way to do a quick edit.
Yeah. And that's just almost like taking a step back away from the book and just looking at it objectively. Mm-hmm. And I've also done like counted pages. Are all my chapters about the same in length? And
should they be about the same in length?
I would say average. Like most of my books that are historical, I think I usually want them at least 10 pages. But sometimes I'll have more than one scene in there. So it could just be moving a scene into another chapter. And I don't, so maybe between 10 and 20 is like the longest chapter I would want. That's a long chapter. So I mean, there's a difference between 10 and 20 pages, but I'm not going like 6 pages and I'm not going 25 pages.
So when you're talking about pages, what are you looking at in word count?
Just manuscript pages. So if you had 300 words in manuscript, so 3,000 word chapter. Yeah, so that would be on the shorter end. And I've written a young adult book, and that one, the chapters are a lot shorter. Mm-hmm. In fact, the Adam and Eve book I'm writing right now, the chapters are pretty short too. They're maybe 6 pages long.
Oh, that is.
But so short. They'll probably end up being 6 to 10 every chapter.
I do that, but I don't know. You know, I didn't have a reason for doing that. I just kind of like to.
And
do
if
that.
It just feels that's more natural, and some writers will have multiple scenes in a chapter, and you might just every scene might be its own chapter. Mm-hmm. And you could be doing that, as well.
I've seen books, though, where they'll have, like, a super short chapter and then some really long ones.
Yeah, and you'll see thrillers. A lot of times thrillers will even just have a half a page will be, and you'll have 150 chapters by the end.
Do you think that changes the pacing?
Yeah, I think they're chopping up the pacing, and you'll see suspense novels kind of do that, too, or the...
Makes them move a little bit faster. Yeah,
there's kind of a big splash, a scene, and the scenes will be a little bit shorter with more punch in them instead of... description and emotional.
Mm-hmm. You don't notice the description when you're running from the monster.
Right, you don't. Yeah.
Unless it's tripping you. And
in fact, I was listening to a thriller writer. His name is John Gilstrap. And it was a couple years ago at We Give Utah Writers. And he said, my characters don't have time for romance. And so he doesn't have the kissing. He doesn't have the emotional trauma going on. He says they're just on the run and they're trying to survive. And So
you wouldn't be thinking about that too much.
I mean, yeah, she's cute, but there's no they're not going out or anything.
I wonder if she'll live.
Yeah.
All right. There was something else you said about switching viewpoints. Okay, this is something we talk about a lot in our writers group where, you know, we get lost if the viewpoints switch too oftenly or not in a way that's kind of uniform, not uniform, that's not what I'm trying to say, a pattern, kind of a pattern, you know, like...
Yeah, and what you want to do is, if you're going to write, for instance, in multiple viewpoints, so say, it doesn't matter if you're writing first person, like you can have multiple viewpoints in first person, every character might be in first person, but, so if you have multiple characters and you're writing their viewpoints, you still need to pick a main character, and that main character... Like, if you're going to count up their scenes, they're going to have more scenes than everybody else. And so that's how that main character becomes a main character. So you just want to make sure if you are in the main... Whichever character you choose to be the viewpoint of the scene, that character is the one that has the most to lose or is the most affected.
Oh.
So, like, in Abinadi, when I was writing about his death, I'm not giving anything away.
Okay, no spoilers.
So when I was talking about his death, I thought, okay, this could be told two ways. It could be told from his point of view as he's dying and feeling the agony of fire touch his skin. Mm-hmm. Or it could be from his wife's point of view as she's watching her husband die. So I remember like sending out a blog post and saying, you know, what do you think is the most compelling? And everyone said the wife. Mm-hmm. And I could, like, as an author, I could see it being really intense both ways. So I wrote it in her point of view. And so whoever either goes through the most change or gains the most knowledge or has most, I guess, just is affected the most of whatever the event happens.
That's a good way to decide whose viewpoint the scene is going to be told
from. Who is affected the most.
That's really good. Mm-hmm. I like that. Wow, we're almost out of time already.
It gets rather interesting, though, when the one who has the most to lose actually loses.
Yeah. Yep. And that's where the conflict comes in, too, is the person that will be the most conflicted in the scene.
Okay, common mistakes you see writers make in their writing that you edit?
Point of view, that's one, because a lot of times people would head hop, and they don't understand that. They think, well, I'm writing omniscient.
Yes, omniscient, that's what I wanted to talk about.
That, I struggle with that.
And that's different than head hopping. So the best thing to do is get a book on point of view. And you can really see, like, Orson Scott Card has a book called Characters and Point of View. Mm-hmm. Or, I think it's Characters and Point of View first. Anyway, but he actually has diagrams, and it's really interesting. Diagrams. And another thing, too, is to get books that are in omniscient, and you can see how they're written, and then say, okay, that's not what I'm trying to do. A lot of middle grade will be omniscient, like Lemony Snicket series.
Oh,
Brandon Sanderson, his Alcatraz middle grade series, that's omniscient point of view. And it's kind of fun, but you have to know what you're doing. And sometimes you'll see some head hopping in books, and it's just probably an editorial error. So it doesn't give you the right to do it.
They didn't go to your company.
No, or they had an editor that didn't maybe understand it, and so that's why content editing comes in, is really picking that kind of stuff out.
Okay. So with omniscient, it's not like you can hear what everybody's thinking at you know.
Well, omniscient is the narrator. It's kind of, well, omniscient means godlike. And so the point of view that you're in, whether you can be the narrator's point of view or you can be the main character's point of view, they know everything. Mm-hmm. And so,
but you still need one point of view at a time, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, for instance, in a book I'm reading right now, it's called The Book Thief by Mark.
I just read it. Zuckert
or something. Yes. That's omniscient.
Yes.
And the whole book is in the point of view of death.
It's first person.
And, well,
omniscient.
Yeah. But he knows everything that's happened, and he knows how all the characters feel. So he tells the story. And even though you get to know all the characters, and you feel like you're in their point of view, you're actually in the omniscient point of view the whole time.
It's really an interesting point of view.
Yeah, it's really neat. It's really very creative. Mm-hmm. So, and
omniscient, he does it masterfully, though. It's just
so really. So, I would say if you are writing your first book or two, don't write an omniscient unless you've really studied it, or unless you feel like middle grade. Jennifer Nelson, she's just had, I think, her second book come out, and she writes a fun middle grade series, and she writes an omniscient. And it's almost like the Dear Reader type of writing, where you say, and now, dear reader, if you don't understand what this means, I will now tell you what this means. And that's how Lemony Snicket.
And I've heard that called second person. When you address the audience as you, you've had some confusion over that.
Yeah, and so that's why, I mean, Orson Scott Card but goes through it really well. And so that's a really, he has these little, I can still, like, see in my mind these little diagrams where, okay, this is how, you know, this point of view see the people, and this is how this point of view.
Yeah, we need to read that one. Okay. All right. I'm going to skip a lot of these questions because we're almost done. I was going to talk about the differences between editing for content and line editing, but we just don't have time unless you have something you...
Well, I think we said it a little bit.
Yeah, you did talk about it a little bit. Yeah. And then common plot problems... You see?
Well, I think with common plot problems that I see is just, it's really the show don't tell thing. Because a lot of new writers, and I did the same thing, and I still do it when I have to go through my second draft. I think, okay, I need to show the scene, and then also make sure anything I'm presenting, that is tied up eventually in when you're writing plot. And another thing, too, like if you're writing suspense, you have to be careful that you aren't setting the reader up so much that they know they can immediately guess what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so you'll kind of see that with new writers, well, with that they'll give maybe too much away too early. And also just another thing too is everyone has a sagging middle of their book. Mm-hmm. And so you need to make sure with your plot that your conflicts are strong enough to carry. You have, and I call also the fourth hook, where the fourth hook of your book is why you read to the end of the book. And so you have to have one main conflict, and then you have smaller conflicts. And so sometimes you see in plotting where you don't have enough of the smaller conflicts along the way. Mm-hmm. Or the conflict is resolved too easily, or there's no real climax. And so it's, I mean, there's sometimes you just get overwhelmed and you think, oh, I'm not going to do it because there's too much.
Yes.
So don't worry about any of that in your first draft. Just get that story down.
Any suggestions on how writers can critique or edit other writers' work?
Yeah, one good way to do that is if you're in a critique group, you actually learn when someone else is critiquing someone else, you actually learn even when it's not your own manuscript. And also reading in that genre. One lady in my critique group, she writes Regency romances, and I've been reading Regency romances just here and there, because I feel like when I go to critique, I want to be able to contribute and not just say, oh, you need a comma right there, but to actually feel like I can make an intelligent comment. And so I think that can be really helpful, is being educated and always kind of staying up what's in the marketplace now and what's current.
All right. Well, thank you. This has been really informative. We've been talking with Heather Moore again about tips on self-editing, and she has some great ideas. So thanks again, and this has been Writing Snippets. Thank you for joining us.
No words were harmed in the making of this podcast. Go to www.writingsnippets.com for more podcasts.